This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.
Hello and welcome to the Twin Peaks Investing Podcast. It is 7 p.m. It's the 23rd of June, 2026, and it's absolutely boiling. The heat wave has hit even Leicestershire. What have you had, Henry? What sort of temps have you had there down in London?
We are about 33 today, I think. 33, 35, something like that.
Wowza.
It's actually not as stifling as I thought it was going to be. If you look at the news, they're making out that we're all going to be spontaneously combusting in the streets. Actually, it's not too bad. It's not too bad.
Yes, I've spent the day indoors, mate, and all the aircon stuff is on, and been drinking copious amounts of, as you can see, another tankardier of ginger ale,
Jamaica ginger beer,
lots of ice.
That's the way, mate.
But I'm still feeling thirsty and hot. Right. Folks, thank you for coming back to us. Henry and I are going to try and navigate the heat and give you a thoroughly enjoyable podcast, as we did with Twin Peaks Investing Podcast 181. We had some, again, fantastic feedback. We're just selecting two out of the various people that have come back to us. And as we mentioned before, going forward, we're going to be selecting individuals each month that have supported the podcast, made a donation, made a comment, done retweets, etc., 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 and then we'll identify the next winner of a free 1 month subscription to ShareScope, probably the second podcast in July, which is not too far away. Right, so we had some feedback from our good friend Matthew Gregory, Matthew with a single T, Gregory 5, and he came back and he said, "Another great show as always, chaps. Really interesting look at the ways to look at AI. I must admit, I never looked at National Grid as a renewables play, but I hadn't thought of it from a AI perspective. Good show, very thought-provoking," was his comments. Yeah. And then, of course, Henry, one of our winners of last month's ShareScope subscription was Terry Vaughan, and again on YouTube, Terry was saying, "An excellent podcast with excellent analysis about National Grid. I did not know about National Grid owning 6% of his assets in America. The unique selling point of the podcast is you always learn something, and National Grid is a real life example of learning something new. And please keep up the good work. Take care, gentlemen." And then you had some news regarding Terry and a little post, something in the post, Henry.
I did it. Not so little, actually. I got two parcels from our good friend Terry containing a stack of investing books. And if listeners go and have a look on my LinkedIn or on my my X feed, you'll see a picture of the books. A very, very thoughtful gift from Terry. There are some great books in there. I've already devoured the updated Jim Slater's new Zulu Principle book. Fantastic. And I'm now on to What Darwin Taught Me About Investing, which is absolutely fascinating. So I'm learning about the evolutionary life cycle of bees and what that can teach us about being better investors.
Fantastic. Now, you were saying to me off air before we started recording that you spotted something in the Zulu book and that led you to have a look at something else. And then something happened today. Do you want to share that?
Well, you would not believe this. So for those of you that don't know, The Zulu Principle is a book written by a guy called Jim Slater, who was a small cap investor in the UK. And one evening, Jim was having a conversation with his wife, who just read an article about the Zulu in South Africa. And so she suddenly started reeling off all these statistics about Zulus, you know, what they eat, where they live, how many there are, what the culture's like, what they wear. And it was only a four-page article. And Jim thought to himself, oh, well, you know, if my wife knows this much after just reading a four-page article, what if she went to the local university and spoke to a professor of African history? You know, she'd probably be an absolute expert on Zulu culture, within 6 months. And if she went to the library and took out a load of books about it, she'd be possibly the world's most renowned expert on a very niche subject. And so he came up with this concept called the Zulu Principle, which is all about, as investors, specializing in a very small niche of the market, but knowing it better than anybody else, and therefore being better able to identify opportunities. Anyway, there is a share investing screen that goes with the Zulu Principle, Jim Slater's Zulu Principle screen, which filters for things like the growth and share buybacks and various other things. And so just out of idle curiosity, I went on ShareScope and plugged in the screen, because you can use some pre-built filters. And three companies came up, one of which was Ramsden's Holdings. And I thought, oh, that's interesting. I've not looked at Ramsden's for a while. Sure enough, I don't own it, but sure enough, this morning, a flipping takeover offer came in for them. You couldn't make it up, Peter.
Yes, folks. So Ramsden, RNS this morning, absolutely stonking takeover premium of 33% versus its previous close. So the shareholder is going to get £6 per share and up to 9 pence. Is it 9 pence? 9 pence per share of dividends. I hope some of you are fortunate enough to have been listening to the pod for more than 2 years, because less than 18 months ago, December 2024, Henry and I hosted, I think it was up to about 20 individuals on a live festive recorded podcast. And we had Stealth Serve, which is Jace, everyone knows, Jason Needham, the trend follower guru. But we also had a special guest of Joe Ingham on the show. And during that special pod, I think it went on for 2 hours, that pod, mate, because nobody wanted to go home.
It was a long one.
Talk. It was another marathon. We discussed Ramsden, and the share price then, 18 months ago, was sub £2.25. So excluding dividends, you guys would have more than doubled your money and almost trebled your money if you'd had a look at the share price since we had spoken about it at 225. It's going out now in total, if the takeover continues to an exit, at £6.09. So congratulations to any of you, ladies and gents, that hold Ramsden Holdings. And if you do hold them, let me and Henry know, reply to this pod and say, yes, I purchased it then. This is the return I've got, whatever. Or I sold it just last week and I'm missing out. We want to hear the good, the bad, and the indifferent. So yes, Henry, we're fortunate enough to guide people towards that one. With regards to RNS, I must talk about one RNS which caught people unawares, because one of the constants on this podcast, ladies and gents, for those of you that are new to it, is Henry and I talking about and reiterating the fact of not to chase dividend yields, and to be mindful of the debt levels regarding stocks and the free cash flow regarding stocks, because they need to maintain the growth in order to pay the dividend, need to keep the debt low in order to maintain the dividend. And there's a curious sort of post RNS this morning, sorry, from Telecom Plus. So reiterated its final results with revenues increasing 5.6% and pre-adjusted profits rising 4.7%. The company saw a significant 23.3% increase in total customers to 1.43 million, driven partly by the acquisition of broadband customers from TalkTalk. And then it talked about the fact that it was going to enhance shareholder returns, companies initiating a £40 million share buyback program, which is a topic we're going to be covering later on, representing 50 pence per share, alongside a proposed final dividend of 12 pence per share, bringing in total distribution of £1 per share. However, they also announced a five-year strategy aimed at doubling its multi-service customers to over 1 million by full year 2031. And they were talking about the fact that the plan is to focus on optimizing its multi-service offering, scaling its partner sales channels, building brand recognition, and enhancing its digital expertise through AI adoption. Irrespective of all of that, the markets went, no, we don't like what is going on regarding this, because they're detailing the proposition and what they're looking to enhance and the quality and the resilience of the earnings. Anyway, the investors, the institutions went, no. And the share price, which was £20.65 in June of this time last year, hit a low today of £6.44 before it closed down 25% at £7.10, Henry. So, you know, I think the total return for the last 5 years is sub 60%. Yeah, so even with the chunky dividend that it was paying before, you are down over the last 5 years regarding
woeful.
That stock.
Absolutely
on a
woeful.
On a total return basis, or at least from its highs.
I mean,
so, yeah, so it's a very concerning one.
Yeah, it didn't look that bad an update to me. I mean, annoyingly, somebody distracted me when I was reading the RNS this morning. I have no position in Telecom Plus. And all I saw this morning was the final results. And I remember getting about this far and going, oh, look, revenue's up 6%, profit up 9%, earnings per share up 3%. Yeah, looks fine.
Did you spot that bit there for the shareholders that last year they were reliant on the dividend? They were getting 57%
down here. No, I've missed this
on the
see.
Final dividend, and it's got slashed by 45 pence to 12 pence.
You see, but
so they've all gone deep and take a breath. And that's, I'm not saying that's the only reason why they've balked at it, but they've walked away from it, mate.
Yeah.
And this is why they were talking about going forward, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. And people have only seen that massive cut from 57 to 12 and gone, I'm out of here.
Well, this is the interesting thing, Peter, because it leads us quite nicely into our topic of the day, because most investors spend their time thinking about whether a company's growing their profits. You know, they'll look at this line here and they'll say, well, look, revenue's up 9%. They'll do exactly what I did. Revenue's up 9%. Good, right, tick, move on. But there's a second question which matters just as much, really. What does management do with the profits once they've earned them?
Yeah.
And like you say, they were paying out a dividend. Now, not so much. They're reinvesting back in the business. They're doing something different. Every
Absolutely.
Pound that the business generates can only be invested in a number of ways. You know, the 390 million gross profit that they're going to generate in 26 can only be spent in a number of ways. They can reinvest it. They can use it to buy competitors or new, you know, complementary businesses. They can pay it out as dividends. They can buy back shares, or they can retain that cash to strengthen their balance sheet, either to pay down debt or to build a cash pile. Now, that sounds simple, right? But in practice, it's one of the most important tests of management quality, and it's usually the thing that management teams get totally around their neck.
I absolutely agree.
You know, now we've had over the last couple of years more and more UK companies buying back shares. They're going into the market and they're saying, look, we don't want to use the money for reinvestment. We don't want to use it for dividends. Actually, we want to buy shares off the shareholders. We want to buy it off the market because we think the shares are undervalued. So we're going to take those shares and we're either going to put them in a cupboard and reissue them at a later date, or we're going to destroy them completely and reduce the share count. So the question, you know, one of the questions I've got for today, do we think that share buybacks are evidence of, you know, management discipline, or are they evidence that companies have just run out of better ideas? What do you think?
I think it's a combination of both. And probably the third angle is that they're looking to ensure that they meet the criteria, Henry, for the earnings per share trigger that triggers their bonuses often. Yeah.
Yeah. Bit of financial engineering.
Absolutely that. Yeah. So, and other people have other things allowed to that particular reason. I'm going to speak more about investment trusts a bit later on, and that the principle of the reasons why they were so active in recent years regarding buybacks was to do with the discount to NAV. So that was trying to reduce that discount, you know, squeeze that sort of pressure, reduce the number of stocks and enhance the value for shareholders. So it's an interesting one. And if we're not going to talk much about tech stocks of 2024 and 2025, but significantly, if you look at the stocks in the FTSE All Share, the larger ones that have done significant buybacks, their share price haven't increased Yeah, they're languishing almost where they were. Yeah, most of those listed companies, the ones that have done significantly well, have performed exceptionally well for shareholders. And that's what you've got to look at, which ones are doing the buyback and actually creating value for the shareholders, and which are not, and are just actually wasting money. Yeah. Because they've, like you said, Henry, run out of ideas. You know, I would rather get an increased dividend. You know, I haven't got any ideas right now, so I'm going to give you a special dividend while we wait.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree with you. I'm not a huge fan of buybacks. I find that, although I get the theory, you know, if you've got 1,000 shares and you buy half of them back and delist them, your earnings per share will double, all else being equal. Yeah. In practice, it doesn't really seem to work like that. And just as often as not, like you say, they're buying back significant quantities of shares and the share price is going absolutely nowhere for whatever reason.
Absolutely. And the interesting thing is, as well, with some companies, you've got to be careful, because they're actually doing it in a way that they're buying back the stock, and some of them are being held in treasury so they can bring it back to the market when things get better for the economy, or better for them individually as a company. So there often is a case of that. And some of them who've got quite a large pension scheme will actually put it into the pensionable trust area of the business and have the pension trust actually buying back the shares, as well as the shares listed company doing the same. So yeah, it's always very different. And I think it goes back to having the time to read small print. What's the purpose of it?
Yeah.
What is the purpose of this buyback? And do they actually execute on what the purpose is, or do they end up just spending 100 million quid in a gun? Share price is 15% lower anyway.
Yeah. Well, it's only really attractive if the price paid is sensible.
Yes.
You know, if the shares are expensive, if you look at what we've got on the screen, Intercontinental Hotels Group, for example, should the management team have been buying shares down here at, you know, 50 pence a share, or should have they been buying them up here at £2?
Precisely. Precisely. You know,
and oddly enough, where were they more likely to have been buying them? I would argue when the business is on an upward momentum, because that's generally when cash flow is starting to pick up, profits are starting to pick up. And yet, ironically, that's not always the best time to buy them.
Not always, yeah.
You know, I mean, I was going to talk about, when I was researching for this episode, one of our favourites, actually, Rolls-Royce Group. If I just reset, where are we? Here we are, overview, Rolls-Royce Group. It's a bit of a turnaround business, this. But it is
Henry, a bit of a turnaround business, do you think?
Yeah.
Really?
British understatement, Peter.
Right, okay.
It's too hot for hyperbole. you look at the share price, and you know, it's the understatement of the century, really. We were down here at whatever this was, £1.50 a share, and now we're all the way up at £13-14 a share. We're up nearly 100%, well, in fact, 200%, 89%, another 100%, 3 years running. We're up 20% year to date. So this business is very much in turnaround mode. It's got improving free cash flow. And returns on capital have massively, massively improved. You know, you've got a three-year average of 7%, but their latest reported figures were 32%. And so this is starting to reopen the capital return debate. Their 2025 full-year results included guidance for about $3.5 to $4 billion of free cash flow. And they've launched a share buyback.
Yeah, excellent.
You know, if you look at wherever we are, I think they've just had a, they've had a trading update out 30th of April. I'm not going mad. They've had a strong start to the year, driven by this transformation program. And they, as they're continuing to expand their earnings, their cash and their growth potential of the business, basically they're getting more confident about what the future looks like for them. Operational performance has been strong across the entire group. And they've got quite a diversified portfolio of businesses. They've got a net cash balance sheet, and well, they've got what they describe as, wherever it was, here it is, a best-in-class total cash cost to gross margin ratio. Don't say that too many times when you've had a pint of beer because you'll get it wrong.
Or in the heat.
Or in the heat. But they're basically building a more resilient and agile company. You know, that sounds good. That sounds like the sort of business where, yeah, you can support a buyback. And arguably, if you've got that positive forward momentum, buying shares today, even though the shares have gone up a lot, buying shares today, they may well be cheaper than they're going to be in 3 or 4 years if that positive momentum continues.
Absolutely. And one needs to remember as well, Henry, when they go back X amount of years, when did that massively dilutive placing, yeah, when everyone said, and even including myself, that's them done. Stay away from the shares. The shares have gone up tenfold since then, or if not more, 15-fold. That dilution of excess number of shares, despite which they performed significantly well for their shareholders, look at the share count, they're now looking to reduce the share count back to, or not saying back to where it was, but reduce it significantly going forward, which helps regarding the earnings per share. So, yeah, so good for them. They've performed, they've delivered. I think you said last time that they've got cash on the balance sheet as well now, so they can afford to do that. And if they find a suitable acquisition, bolt-on acquisition, I'm sure they will go for it. But in the meantime, whilst we're doing well, let's reward the shareholders by reducing the share count. And then, therefore, when we go to deliver dividends to them or whatever else we're going to deliver for them, incrementally, each share gets more dividends. So happy days.
Absolutely. So one of the other things that that businesses can do is really to make acquisitions. And I've become, I wouldn't say obsessed with acquisitive businesses this year, but I've certainly taken a significant interest in them, having been quite sceptical of them historically. Now, this is effectively where capital allocation gets quite interesting for me, because at their best, acquisitions can make some really exceptional compounding businesses. People go raving about businesses like Diploma. I mean, I'm a bit biased because I own Diploma, but that is a buy and build type model. You've got Judges Scientific as well, another one I own, which hasn't done quite as well, but it's a similar sort of model. And this is effectively where these businesses are, where the acquirer's got a repeatable model, they've got pricing discipline and a decentralized management system. So effectively, they do what we do as private investors. They look at the universe of private businesses that are out there in their space. They wait for them at the right price, and then they go and buy them. They cut out the extraneous costs. They roll the management into a central pot, or rather the infrastructure into a central pot. They leave the management to carry on doing what they're doing. And if all goes according to plan, you gradually build a little portfolio of really high-flying businesses.
Absolutely.
Now, the test... Sorry, go
sorry,
on.
Then. Carry on. I was going to say, can we see the screen for Diploma or...
Oh,
judges?
Yeah. I was going to say, we've got... this is Diploma.
But carry on, sorry.
And you can see over the last 4 years, they've done terrifically well. The share price has really motored. But the thing that's really eye-catching is the turnover.
Ah.
It's this little graph up here. So back in 2012, they were turning over about 400,000 a year? 400 million, that'll be, not 400,000.
Okay. 400 million.
Yeah, 400 million. This year, they've turned over about 1.5 billion.
That's fantastic. Compounding, regarding the company.
And it becomes exponential as well, because you buy small businesses and you hold them as they grow within your portfolio. And so this becomes a real tailwind to the business if you do it well. You buy cheap, you hold, you grow. Your business becomes exponentially growth-oriented.
And with doing that as well, it's rewarded the customers, hasn't it?
Absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
So
they've used, it's rewarded,
so they've used
investors,
the money wisely.
I mean.
They've boosted the ROI.
Yeah.
You know,
your operating profit's grown year after year. But
yeah,
most importantly,
absolutely,
your earnings per share, this is what you as a shareholder get back from the business. And it's matched, it's walked in lockstep with turnover, which is exactly what you want to see with an acquisitive business. What you wouldn't want to see, incidentally, is somebody like S4 Capital. Issues lots of shares, turnover goes through the roof, earnings per share fall off a cliff. They diverge completely. That is very, very problematic, because what you end up with is a huge share count in issuance and no earnings to prop up the share price. And so the share price then craters.
Can we see the similar sort of screen for that one, Henry? The same one for that one, please.
There you go. You
see. So you can see, so people can see graphically. If you're listening to this, go across to YouTube and listen to this and see the screens that Henry and I are talking about. You can see the actual spike up there to 2022, Henry, regarding turnover, and the drop off, and everything else has dropped off ever since.
Yeah.
Earnings per share, now he's sitting there. Yeah.
This is what they did. They issued a load of equity. They took on a load of debt. Turnover explodes, as you'd expect it to. But earnings per share don't follow.
Do not.
You know, they were wildly negative when the business started out. And it's just got worse and worse and worse year after year. And operating profits then started to crater as well, because these businesses aren't being well integrated. They are actually falling apart under S4 Capital by all accounts. And so the more he buys, the worse things get, and the worse things get, the more he needs to buy. Eventually, you know, they can't issue any more debt because they can't afford to fund it. They can't issue any more shares because the share count's ballooned. Mm. Where do you go? You're stuck.
Absolutely. I think the beautiful thing about the graphic as well, Henry, it just reiterates the difference in actual returns for you. It's beautiful to just be able to look at them, to see things peaking in 2022, 23, dropping off, and you're thinking, right, okay.
And you can see here the market responds to these metrics. So in 2021, we've got absolute hype as revenues growing, you know, 200% or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden people go, well, hang on a minute, what's happening to the profit? What's happening to the earnings per share? What's happening to the share count? We don't like where this is going. And it was a huge sell-off. Yeah, £8 a share down to £1.50. I think I bought in somewhere around here, about £2 a share, and it was all downhill from there. All downhill. I mean, year to date, they're up 62%, and I have no idea why.
Speculation, mate. You know, everyone's thinking it's going to bounce back and suddenly deliver. I got pied twice with that one, and twice was enough, and I got out. And I've never looked back regarding that particular stock, mate. So, yeah, it's one of those. I think sometimes, Henry, it's not just about the historical performance of individuals. I think I was lured in by Sir Martin Sorrell regarding that. I think it's about what they're doing now, and essentially how they're performing now. Yeah. You know, I do not want to see, which was, you know, big whoppers this and big whoppers that, and the financial engineering that some of these CEOs do, rather than delivering actually for shareholders, because buybacks can hide a lot of sins,
yeah,
I think. So you've got to be looking at what they're doing, how they're performing. And the buybacks is an extra bonus, not something to captivate all minds and distract.
Yeah.
Very important.
Absolutely. So on this theme, I've got one more to throw into the mix, which is a company we've never actually spoken about before, or if we have, I've forgotten about it. It's another acquisitive type business, and not one I'd looked at massively before today's episode. It's Bunzl, BNZL.
We've talked about that many times, mate, because I used to own it, remember?
Oh, did
you? Yes, we've talked about Bunzl. Yes, we have, Henry.
Oh, right. Well, I won't labour the point then, other than to say...
No, you can. Labour it all you want, mate, because it's a beautiful company. It's a fantastic acquisitive company. And up until recently, it was doing extremely well. And I think markets just got a little bit, not necessarily bored of it, but it's like, oh, it's slow, it's stodgy, da-da-da-da. And then it just had a bit of a news that wasn't positive last year.
Something seems to have happened last year.
Yeah, last year. It didn't have a good year last year.
Down 40%. Mm. And now it's starting to recover. Up,
recover. Yeah.
Up 25% year to date. Now, their 2025 strategic report, of the 77 acquisitions that they've made in the last 5 years, 74 were described as bolt-ons. With an average committed spend of about 25 million per deal. And that is on turnover of 11 billion. So they're
Yeah.
not particularly expensive acquisitions that they're making. It's a business that is, like you say, quite boring. They make disposable cutlery, cleaning products, personal protective equipment, that sort of stuff. But they operate internationally. Their main geographic segment's North America, but they operate across Europe, the UK, all around the world, really. And they supply a wide range of sectors as well. You can't actually see it because this isn't the activity breakdown, the way they report it, doesn't come out on the ShareScope data set.
Okay.
But their largest segment's the food service and grocery business. So think Walmart, Domino's Pizza, Hilton Hotels, the NHS, that sort of space.
This is a quick hello to you, our valued Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener. Whatever channel you're listening to, please make sure to subscribe, and you'll always be the first to get the new episodes. Thank you for your continued support.
Now, what caught my eye with this was, again, we've had, if it wants to load, a trading update released this morning.
Ah,
And
okay.
what caught my eye is that group revenue, where are we? Group revenue in the first half of the year is expected to grow by about 4%. So they are still growing. They're not going to blow the lights out at 4%, but they are expected to grow. And whilst they're mindful, they describe it as being mindful of continuing macroeconomic and geopolitical uncertainties. They've actually upgraded their 2026 guidance. So they're feeling fairly positive. And this is the benefit of having little acquisitions in a nest. You buy a few, you leave them alone, you let them do their thing. Sometimes, you know what? If you just leave them be, they'll carry you through tough times. So, yeah, one that caught my eye, Bunzel.
Well, it looks like you caught other people's eyes as well, Henry, today. Is that a 5% pop today then?
Yeah, 5.5%, up
On a
5.6%.
market that was down this morning, and then I don't know where it finished at 5 o'clock, but it might have eked a little bit of almost flat today regarding the whole market. But it a 5% return on a really not so good market today. That's a really, really good. I think there's a re-rating going on there, Henry. It's already done 25%. Year to date, given the poor performance of last year, still paying a forward dividend yield of 3%. So, the people that didn't want it at nearly 30 quid a year and a bit ago, are able to buy it now at what, half the price?
25,
What is it at? 25? Is it 20, 25 pounds a share? So yeah, so
26,
it's 26,
2602 as of
26, 26
this
from
recording.
35 slash nearly 40 pounds a couple of years back. Yeah, not a bad company to actually get involved in. So buybacks there, bolt-ons there. Yeah. All it needs is, I mean, one word in the middle there, upgrading some guidance, and all of a sudden pop 5%.
Takes off.
If they
I mean,
come again in 3 months' time for another update, or 6 months' time with a half with another result RNS, and say we've exceeded, what will happen again? It will pop again. The re-rating will continue, and before you blink, the shares get towards Christmas and they're sitting at £30 a share. So you want that to be continue with positive momentum, and the share price could go back up towards 30 and exceed that. And if we don't look after it and don't reward it accordingly by buying its shares, I'm sure one of the acquisitive US companies will go, "Thank you for doing those 77 bolt-ons. We'll take you over in its entirety now, off your pot, and pay a 15 to 35% premium for it." So who knows, mate? Who knows?
Yeah, spot on.
Right, Henry, I'm conscious we've already halfway through our allocated time for this, but I'm gonna take a break here now and speak about our wonderful individuals that have been making some donations to the FT Financial Literacy and Inclusion campaign that we are fundraising for in memory of our dear friend Mark Bentley. As some of you, or all of you should be aware now, we had to commence a new page for this particular fundraise. We usually run from January through to January / December, a full 12 months-ish for each fundraise. We're sitting currently at £1,655 or thereabouts for a target that is 5,000. We're already halfway through the year. So we're hoping that you, ladies and gents, can find your kindness button and hit the Just Giving page and make a donation to this fundraise that we're going to have, that we continue to have for Mark. We've had a nice donation from a chap called Derek Moore, and Derek made a donation, and his comments were, "This is a great cause, and I'm sure it is a great way to honour Mark's life. Thank you for a brilliant podcast, very informative and thought-provoking. I have only recently found you, but I'm glad that I did." So thank you ever so much for that, Derek, for making that anonymous donation. We really, really appreciate it. Very, very kind of you. And then, Henry, you made a donation. Do you want to explain that one as well on top of the previous one you've made?
I did, yes. Well, actually, strictly speaking, this is a little thank you to Terry. Terry, sadly, his mother passed away earlier this year. I don't think he'll mind me mentioning this, but his mother sadly passed away from myeloma, which is a rare blood cancer. And in return for the kind gift of the books, he asked whether I would donate a few pounds, both to the FT Flick and to Myeloma UK, who do a lot of work researching blood cancers and also supporting the families and patients of blood cancer. And so I've made a little donation of £10 in memory of Terry's mother, and also put a little note to say thank you, Terry, for your continued kindness, your generosity, and your support of the podcast. It is genuinely very much appreciated by both Peter and myself.
Absolutely, it is. No, thank you. And it's a brilliant that he actually sent those books over to you. He did put an asterisk on those books, by the way, that the ones that I hadn't read, that you had to pass them forward to me, because you know I'm a bit of a book junkie, Henry.
Yeah.
So when you're finished, that'll be gratefully received, and I will then add another donation as well. We also had a donation from John MacD, and his words were, "An excellent cause and an excellent podcast. Very pleased that Henry seems to have upgraded his audio."
And it was about time, John.
Fantastic. Thank you, John. Very, very kind of you. Also had a donation from Matthew Gregory. "Keep up the excellent work, chaps. You're delivering high signal content to a world that is mostly just broadcasting noise." I love that quote.
I love that. Yeah.
£30 just donated there from Matthew. Thank you, sir. And Trader Mark. All of these donations, by the way, are on the new page. So I'll give you the URL for that new page. Trader Mark, a month ago, I never got to meet Mark, but I knew him by reputation. This is the lovely way to honour his memory and a legacy for the work he did. Well done, chaps. Keep up the great work in financial education. Thank you very much, Trader Mark. So I hope you guys appreciate what we're doing. And if you do, please, can you, ladies and gents, make a donation to www.justgiving.com/page Twin Peaks Investing Podcast 2026 Mark Bentley. And that's where you can find that particular Just Giving page. Really appreciate all you guys making a donation. Now, Henry, the wonderful news of the Investor Summit. If you can pop across to that page for me, please.
Oh, I've preempted you in the wrong direction.
No, if you can find that page for me. The brilliant thing about it is, Henry, is that we are in a current position we are in because of the hard work we did the previous year. And we are actually in a position where we are running out of space for the three different tracks that we have for presentations, talks, panel sessions, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We have, as you can see, looking at 450 plus this time round of attendees, and we're still running the early bird tickets offer, which is a measly £80 to give yourself breakfast, lunch, and something to eat at the end, plus essentially a free bar, and you get the three panels, three tracks of discussions almost for free. Right, so who've we got coming so far? And the people that I can announce and confirm, we've got Equitable Investments with that are the one of the platinum sponsors, Retail Book, one of the platinum sponsors. We've got a third platinum sponsor that's going to be confirming this week, if not next week. And the other sponsors we've got are Polar Capital, Lord Adventure, Odessian Capital, the Association Investment Companies, Caledonia Investments, Dragon Capital, and ETF, Poolbeg Pharma, European Green Transition. We've even got a wine company supporting us as well regarding our sponsors. The sponsors you can see on Envy screen are the sponsors from last year. But these are the ones I'm reading out now. Speakers, we've got Ben Rogoff, the lead manager of Polar Capital Technology, Dr. George Cooper, founder and CEO of Equitable Investments, Laura Foll, co-fund manager of Lord Adventure, George Barrow, fund manager at Polar Cap Global Financial Trust, Toi An Ne Young, who's director of Vietnam Enterprise Investment Trust, Stuart Widowson, founder and managing partner of Odessian Capital, James Deal, co-CEO of Retail Book, Stacey Parsons, managing director of Retail Book, Micah Curry, VP Personal Finance at Pension B, Pippa Dale from the London Stock Exchange Group, Nick Dilsworth, managing director at Retail Book, Jeff Pressridge is going to be speaking as well, editor at large at Mail on Sunday, Anil Bob Brody Smith, communications director of the AIC, Nick Britton, research and content director at the AIC, Andrew Van Sickle, the editor of Money Week, Simon French, who did a fantastic presentation for us last year, is coming back. He's a chief economist and head of research at Panmure Liberum. Tom Bailey, head of research at Han ETF. Dr. Jeremy Skillington, CEO of Poolbeg Pharma. Cecilia Williams of Computershare. Chris Berry Tro at B, that's MUFG. Jared Ashley, managing director of Tech Morgan and Co. Limited. Jack Kelly, CFO at European Green Transition, Matthew Knight, head of private client sales at Mooncharm Wine Traders, and Nathan Williams of the same company. And the media partners we've got this year, we've not concluded yet, is Master Investor Show, Money Week, ShareSoc, ShareScope, and London Investor Show. So if that doesn't appeal to you guys, I don't know what will. It was an absolutely fantastic show we did last year. We're running it again. We're going to have even more people there, towards 450 to 500 people. So I'm urging you to get the tickets whilst they're only at early bird price of £80 plus VAT before the price is increased very, very soon. And you can go to www.investorsummit.co.uk/tickets to get your early bird tickets at £80 per head. Any comments, Henry? Did that list appeal to you?
Oh, fantastic. I mean, I had a great day last year, but I basically got to swan around meeting members of the audience, which I loved. I'm very excited to see this event back this year, Peter. I had a great time last year, as you know. It's a lovely venue. It was a really great day. It's in a great bit of London. The food was excellent. The drink was excellent. The speakers were fantastic. And I think, generally speaking, it was just a great opportunity to meet like-minded investors, learn about how different people manage their own portfolios, and also about how institutions view the world of investing, because you got access to some really top-tier institutional investors who were right there next to you having a drink, and you could just grab hold of them and introduce yourself, which was lovely.
Absolutely. Well, less of the grabbing, but, you know, you were able to go up to them and say hello. And
yes, speak to them. I wasn't wandering around the room with a lasso and a cattle prod.
Oh, no, it was excellent. And we got some really great feedback. I think that's part of the reason why we were able to get the momentum that we got this time round as well, Henry. And I think the beauty of it is that you know, we also get the opportunity as Henry and I, as a duo, to do our live presentation and discussion regarding whatever the topic may be when we speak. We'll be doing a live Twin Peaks again, which went down an absolute storm, as I think it was standing room only in the room that we had last year, where on that occasion I did something a bit innovative and we pulled somebody out of the audience. I promise you that won't happen again, so don't be scared. We'll be doing a live podcast on the day, Twin Peaks podcast that will be recorded, but it'd be lovely to have all of you ladies and gents that are listening to the pod come on the day for us to meet you in person, and also for you to come and attend the Twin Peaks podcast when we do it live at the brewery, Chiswell Street, London, which is going to be an absolute fantastic day. And then we get to enjoy some beers later on, and just, or wine, depending on your taste, and just chill out. And hopefully will be another glorious hot day like today.
Absolutely.
Right, Henry. I think I need to move on now and talk about buybacks, but I focused on the aspect of investment trusts. And the first one I would like you to pull up will be SMT. And then I'm going to talk a little bit first about that. So that's the
Scottish Mortgage Investment Trust.
Investment Trust, yeah. So we spoke about it already a little bit, but I'm going to just reiterate this. So share buybacks is one of the ways in which investment trusts, specifically investment trusts, try to tackle the discounts to NAV, the net asset value. And what they're trying to do is to just tighten the price, push the share price higher and nearer to the NAV by reducing the number of shares in circulation. Yeah. So, and that's what they try to do. And over the past few years, that number of investment trust share buyback has increased rapidly, and been triggered even more so by the recent activism by Saber and Co. So if you're looking back a few years, share buybacks in the investment trust space was less than 2 billion. We're using winter flood stats here, right? Less than 2 billion in 2021. In 2025, it was 7.5 billion. Yeah, sorry, 2024, apologies. 2024, it was 7.51 billion. And last year, Henry, do you want to guess what the total amount of buybacks was for investment trusts?
Not a clue. Go on, surprise me.
UK listed investment trusts completed a record-breaking 10.22 billion in total share buybacks.
Nice.
That's an absolute staggering amount, folks. So the reason why I've asked you to put up SMT is because SMT, Henry, was one of the companies that did the largest total number of buybacks since 2024. A staggering 3 billion in total of buybacks. Yeah.
Blimey. That's fairly substantial. 3 billion.
That is quite a large amount for a company that's currently valued at 15 billion, 15 to shy of 16 billion. So what they did, they launched a record £1 billion program in March 2024, completed a 1.5 billion buyback in October 2025, and roughly since the end of 2025, total amount to 3 billion. Now, since the start of 2024, they've been helped mainly by a significant re-rating and news after, you know, via the usually sought after SpaceX IPO. And SMT as a, you know, as a holding, it has returned since the beginning of 2024, 74% in total returns. Okay. So if you look back at May 2026 and regarding the news flow, they were extolling about the significant re-rating that they had via the rewards of having exposure at the time when the SpaceX was valued at SpaceX potential IPO was valued at 1.25 trillion, they had exposure to a stake that was valued at nearer to 3 billion, to be precise, 2.98 billion. And that was at a valuation of 1.25, right? So their 151 £1 million investment was 19-fold at that stage at the valuation of at 1.25 trillion. Now, fast forward, Henry, the IPO actually happened when, you know, we were talking about it 2 weeks ago. It's about to happen. IPO happened. SpaceX went public on the 12th of September. 12th of June. Yeah. Just under 2 weeks ago, to be the largest ever initial public offering. The share price was offered up at $135 a share. Subsequently, it peaked, Henry, at £225 per share. This is SpaceX shares here, folks, I'm talking about, on the 16th of June. Yeah. At the 16th of June valuation of 2.78 trillion for SpaceX, you would then therefore be looking at SMT's valuation on the 16th of June at that peak, valued at 6.62 billion. Yeah, the shares have rolled over a little bit since then. But on that day, that stake worth 6.62 billion, the market cap now today for SMT is 15.9 billion. My concern regarding the 3 billion buyback, the significant stake in SMT, is that SMT now is now anchored, almost could potentially be anchored, to the valuation and the performance of SpaceX. Yeah. And bizarrely, Henry, after 3 billion pounds of buybacks and the significant re-rating valuation of SpaceX, guess what? SMT is still, and you see the performance over the last 3 years, how it's bounced back, right? It's still sitting currently today with the share price at £13.95. It's sitting at a 15% discount to NAV. This is what I worked out today. If you've got the NAV's looking slightly different than what you can see there, but it's about 15%. So you have to be mindful that it's had a really good bounce back, that bowl effect, you know, all the way down at the end of 2021-ish, yeah, 2022, and then it started to re-rate and it's come back. Not all of it on the back of SpaceX, but my concern regarding that buyback is that £3 billion was well spent in recent years, but you have to be mindful that if, you know, it's still at 10% plus discount is too much for a quality outfit like SMT.
Is it a quality? Is it a quality outfit? I mean, that's the thing. If they've got, if their biggest holdings in SpaceX, which is on an astronomical valuation, generating no revenue, I would question whether their methodology is buying quality assets.
That's fair and fine and fair enough comment, mate. I think the jury's definitely out, Henry. And the stock had a 2-day blip today. It's bounced back a little bit, I think, SpaceX, and we'll see what happens.
I'm going to throw one in the mix here just to be a bit controversial, right? Yeah, everybody's excited.
We have to be mindful of the lock-in periods for SpaceX and the actual wave of people selling. We'll have to be mindful of.
So there was another business that listed to much fanfare and shot through the roof after IPO. Trump Media and Technology Group. You see that price spike there right at the beginning where it goes $1 to 30. And then what's the share price done after that?
Yeah. Wow.
With much volatility. These businesses, eventually, the economics of the business, the share price will reflect them. It's no good with SpaceX talking about what if we one day get to Mars and what if we one day mine an asteroid and what if we one day control 100% of the world's telecoms network, or we create automotive robots. You know, everybody's going to have their own personal robot thanks to Elon Musk. I can't remember whether he's doing that through Tesla or SpaceX, but one of them. But he hasn't done any of that yet, ladies and gentlemen.
I have to watch myself very carefully here now. You know where my views stand on both of these individuals. And I'm not going to defend one or, you know, did it the other. But I would like to differentiate between Trump Media and Technology. and what the potential is of SpaceX. I think
I,
they're completely falls
in
apart.
fairness here, I'm going to get absolutely lampooned for this one because Trump Media and Technology, as far as I can tell, owns a social network, social media business that no one goes on, issued a load of equity and is now buying a nuclear fusion business. Fine, very bizarre. But SpaceX, on the other hand, does at least have operating companies. It's put something like 90% of the world's satellites into orbit. So it is, they are different propositions. I am not saying they are analogous, ladies and gentlemen. I
Yeah,
am just saying.
that was save us getting attacked on YouTube, mate, because that's where the US listeners will be when they come to attack us.
I am just saying that
Yeah,
that spike there,
I absolutely hear you, mate. I absolutely hear
you
you.
know,
So it went up to two, was it 225 or something like that? The high of the shares, something like that. And
yeah,
it's
I
already
don't
rolled
think
back
it
down.
printed that at close, but I think that was an
Intraday.
intraday high.
It was intraday. Yeah. So it's now sitting at 160. So yeah, I mean, IPO'd at 135. It's got to stay above the IPO for a certain period, and otherwise it triggers some lock-ins and people can
Well,
start
actually,
selling.
it's already under it.
Whether you are an experienced or new investor, you know how valuable it is to conduct portfolio enhancing analysis and to have easy access to data that will give you the edge. As a Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener, you can access an exceptional offer, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. This special Twin Peaks offer is available to new subscribers only, and you can subscribe using the promo code TWINPEETS. The incredible and exclusive offer means that monthly subscribers will get their second month free, and annual subscribers will get their 13th month free. Sign up and subscribe today using the TWINPEETS promo code, and you can save up to £69. Visit sharescope.co.uk for further details and subscribe to the investing and trading analysis and data you need.
Well, there we go. So
it's
we
actually,
have to
according to Sharescope, it's actually down 0.7%. The US market is currently live, so the shares are changing price as I speak. They're down to 159.7 on the latest tick.
So be mindful of that. Right, let's move on from SMT. Keep your eye out on that one. It is still sitting at a discount to NAV. And let's talk about another company here now, Henry. And that one I'm going to talk about is Monks Investment Trust. MNKS is the ticker. It's got a market cap of 2.52 billion. Have you got that one yet, Henry, for me? You go back to the normal summary page for me, please, mate.
That is the normal
is that,
summary
oh that
page.
Is it sorry
yeah.
sorry
for
my eyes
for
were deceiving me
trusts.
Then no, you're absolutely spot on. And the beauty of this one is as with the SMT one, it's a large market cap one. So this is a FTSE 250 one. I should have said that the SMT is a FTSE 100 listed company as well. So Monks Investment Trust is a United Kingdom-based investment trust. The company aims for long-term capital growth, which takes priority over income. The company's objective is to invest globally to achieve capital growth. The company seeks to meet its objective by investing principally in a portfolio of global quoted equities. The number of holdings in the equities typically range from 70 to 200. That's a big basket of stocks. The portfolio contained 105 equity holdings, geographically split between the United Kingdom, Europe, North America, Japan, developed Asia, and emerging markets. And its fund manager is Baillie Gifford. We have had all kinds of attacks and, you know, from Saba and others regarding their portfolio of investment trusts. Now, significantly, we're talking about how much buybacks investment trusts have done, Henry, and their activity was in late 2025. When they repurchased £348 million worth of stocks. And since 2024, their total buybacks is one of £412 million worth. Yeah. And if you look at what they've done, you can see the period of time when they started buying back that they've actually increased the share performance. Yeah. So late 2024, mid 2024, 2025. Last 3 years, 4 years, share prices have gone up. Total returns over 1 year, this includes dividends, folks, is 33.2%. 3 years, 67.3, 5 years. You see the lull in the middle of that chart there, the pause of actual growth is where they didn't go anywhere for almost three to four, 5 years, was only 26.6%. But over the 10 years, the total returns is 307.9%. Now, the beauty of this particular portfolio is a global mandate is that they've got some stocks that most of the individuals listening to this podcast who are familiar with overseas stocks will be aware of. They've got the Scalian Fund, Nvidia, Alphabet, Amazon, Microsoft, Meta, Royalty Pharma, Samsung, and Tencent Holdings. And via that feedback buyback they've had, they performed extremely well. And the shares are currently sitting now at a mere 7% discount to NAV. So the share price is £16.20. I think you both agreed on that price, Henry. And the NAV is currently £17.28. So that's one I think that's worth investigating and shows the benefits of the buyback system that they've had there. And you can see from that chart there, minus 31%. Then you've got, what is that there? Only 12, followed by 19, followed by 18, and currently this year already up 8%. Okay. I'm conscious of the time, Henry, so I'm going to just speak about one more after this one. And this one, Henry, is the Polar Capital Global Healthcare Trust, ticker symbol PCGH. And they did something interesting here, Henry. They did a buyback and also did a tender activity where they said, this is the price. If you wish, you can tender your shares. But they conducted a 100% tender offer regarding their shares in November 2025 as part of a corporate reorganization to extend the trust's life. Yeah. This resulted in shareholders validly tendering 27.25 million shares, which represented 22.47% of the issued capital. And the shares were repurchased at £4.25 per share. Yeah, and you can see it's just below that at the moment. And that reflected a NAV at the time minus costs. The impact resulted in a capital return for shareholders of 116 million. But the wonderful thing about this particular share with regards to the buybacks they've done and the tendering that they've done is, voila, Henry, the share price is currently sitting at a premium to NAV. You know, when all the investment trusts have been written off, there's very few left sitting at a premium discount to NAV. Yeah? A premium to NAV is what it's sitting at now, Henry. Yeah? So over the past few years, 1 year returns, 25.9%, 3 years, 26%, 5 years, 65.1%, 10 years, 167.5%. So this is a brilliant example of a great buyback and tender process that's eliminated discount to NAV. Top 10 holdings here, and you're quite interesting as well. Eli Lilly, United Healthcare Group, AstraZeneca, CVS Health Corp, Roche Holding, Teva Pharmaceutical Industries, Thermo Fisher Scientific, the Cigna Group, Novo Nordisk, and Torrent Pharmaceuticals Limited. I've never heard of Torrent Pharmaceuticals Limited, and that's one company I'm going to go and investigate at some later stage. But there you go. So buybacks regarding investment trusts, buybacks regarding listed companies, need to investigate the quality of the management, the reasons why they're doing it. Are they actually adding at the optimum point here, or are they actually just trying to squeeze the EPS so they can get their rewards for their bonuses? Or a bit like our last example here, where they've done it correctly and at the right time, Polarcap have actually pushed their discount to NAV from discount to a premium. Thoughts, Henry?
It's an interesting business, Polar Capital. It's an interesting trust, I should say, to be precise. I can't say I'm overly keen on... I can't say I'm overly keen on them issuing shares and buying back a third of their capital at pretty much all-time highs, if I'm honest. I don't know what the thinking was.
You have to go in reverse, Henry. They wanted to they tendered it first.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the buyback as well.
Yeah, so yeah, well, yeah, but still, they're basically giving shareholders their money back.
Yeah.
As a tender offer. What they're saying is we don't want your capital. We'll give it you back if you don't want our shares.
Yes, because they wanted a continuation.
A third of the shareholders said, no, we want our money back.
Yeah, if they said, look, there's an offer here, you tender all your shares. If everybody that had shares tendered all their shares, the vehicle would shut down.
Yeah.
What they did, they tendered 22%, which is a vote of confidence and saying, we want you to continue.
Yeah, I suppose that is one way of looking at it. I mean, you know, 80% of the shareholders said, no, we want to keep hold of our shares. Thank you very much.
Absolutely.
And it could well be a response to Saba Capital.
Absolutely. They got in
you know,
there.
They
before,
know that there's some
Saba.
Aggressive movers out there that are looking to basically
exploit.
Snap up and shut down share price weakness in the UK, and they've taken them out at the knees before they had the chance. So that could
absolutely
be quite a smart move, to be fair.
Absolutely. So, yeah. So I'm conscious of the time. Is there anything you want to add regarding any of our discussion, any things we missed that you want to share with people, or anything that's happened that you've not had a chance to tell people about, mate?
Well, I think for me, effectively, the lesson of today is that investors don't need to stop at profits. You shouldn't stop at profits. You need to look further down your RNS statement than just your headline figures. You know,
absolutely,
a good company
absolutely
earns attractive profits, but a great investment requires those profits to be allocated intelligently. And hopefully, Peter and I have given you some ideas about how companies do that today, and hopefully some ideas to go away and research of companies that might be actually doing it even as we speak.
Absolutely agree, Henry. And I think the beauty of looking deeper is that you then eventually get to the elements that really matter, the return on capital, the free cash flow, you know, the debt levels. You know, we've seen so many companies and investment trusts as well over the past 2 or 3 months come out with tentative wordings or flavored or shaded sort of, you know, bespeckled stuff, which isn't. And when people have looked to the fine print, have gone, I've seen what they've done there. The share price has just tanked 10, 15, 25%. So just read, and please read some more regarding each individual stocks that you've got, regarding what they said they were going to do, what they're looking to do. And if you can, and you have the opportunity between 7 o'clock and 8 o'clock before the market opens, please read the RNS as thoroughly as possible. And if you get the opportunity to get out quick before the market catches on, when is a bit of a questionable statement, you can always come back and buy the stock back the same day or a week later when the market's made it 10, 15, 25% cheaper.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah. Okie dokie, Henry. That is a wrap, I think. That's an hour and 10 minutes at least that we've done there. Folks, thank you ever so much for listening to this podcast. Please, please, please share it on the various different platforms that you're on. Please give us your feedback. Please give it a repost on X. Leave your comments if you found anything of this interesting. Please go and visit the Investor Summit page at www.investorsummit.co.uk. Buy your tickets, /tickets. Get your tickets ASAP. I don't want you guys coming back to me disappointed when the ticket price has increased going forward. So we are going to call that a day, Henry. And thank you ever so much, sir, for coming on this pod again. I know you've had a long, hot day. And I dare say you're going to have a long, hot day again tomorrow. So I will try my level best to get all this sorted out so you, ladies and gents, can listen to this on what will be Friday the 26th. And listen to it over the weekend when you're relaxing, hopefully with a nice cold drink in your hands and hopefully a lolly or an ice cream in the other. Henry, thank you, sir, for your generosity. Look forward to speaking to you later on in the week and get this ready for Friday. Yeah. Ladies and gents, take care. God bless you all and have a lovely time in the sunshine. And if you have to work, make sure you're in some lovely air-conned offices. All right. Henry, take care, my dear friend.
You too, pal.
All right. Bye for now.
Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.